Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net, where I teach beginners the skills they need to get their first software development job building Windows and web apps for the world's best companies as quickly as possible. So continuing our examination of the Hub App project template, we're going to learn how the hubpage.xaml and the itempage.xaml binds to the data model that we learned about in the previous lesson. So binding is also known as data binding. It's common in the programming world, especially in the Microsoft platforms and tools and so forth. It's a convenient way of tying the presentation layer to the data model of your application. So you can declaratively define the data source, most likely a collection of objects for a given control, say a grid or a list, and then tell the control to bind to the data source and the particulars of how you want things displayed. And then it takes care of creating a visual representation of each item in the data source as a row or as a list item or whatever the case might be. So whenever you're building phone apps in XAML, you use the binding syntax that we learned about previously. We saw how to bind a static resource for the purpose of styling. We've looked at it a number of times. Let me just point out that, for example, here's an instance of binding to a static resource for the purpose of templating as well. So we'll use a similar style syntax, but use a binding expression that looks a little bit more like this here, and there'll be variations on it. And we'll talk about some of the most popular variations at the end of this lesson. So let's start at the very top and then work our way down. So the page class, in this case, the hub page class, defines a private field called default view model. So if we take a look at the code behind the partial class hub page, we can see that there is a private field called default view model that's set to a new instance of observable dictionary. We'll come back to that in just a moment. This class is something that the template developers added to the template. It's not part of the phone API, so you can see its definition if you wish here in the common folder. You can see that there's this observable dictionary class. It's not all important to understand how it works under the hood right now. All I really care about is what its name implies. Now, we haven't talked about the word observable just yet, but we will pretty soon. So for now, just focus on the fact that we're working with a dictionary, observable dictionary. And so recall from the C# Fundamentals for Absolute Beginner series that a dictionary is a specialized collection that allows you to create a key and an associated value. If you think back to that series, we kind of likened it to Webster's dictionary, where you have a key, the word that you want the definition of, and then you have the actual object or the definition of that key term, which would be in Webster's dictionary, the definition. And in this case, we're dealing with something that has, for example, a string as the key and then an object that is related to that string somehow. All right. So this will be important in just a moment. I'm going to go ahead and shut this down for the moment. So back to our hubpage.xaml.cs file. If we were to scroll down and take a look at our load state, and you recall from the previous discussion about the navigation helper, that this load state is a method that our class handles because it's raised by the navigation helper at the point when our page has been navigated to. Our page has been navigated to. We call on navigated to. It does some things related to state management and then calls back into our load state method here on our hubpage.xaml.cs file. All right, and you can see that it has two lines of code. Sample data groups equals sample data source dot get group async. We looked at that previously when we were looking at the data model, the sample data source dot cs file. And then once we get the collection of groups that are returned to us from this get groups async, then we set that to a key called groups in our default model, which is an observable dictionary, and then give it all those groups that were returned back from the getGroupAsync method call. So this code adds a new key called groups and then sets the associated object to an instance of this collection of groups that's returned from our getGroupAsync method, right? At this point, this is the only thing that gets loaded into our default view model. This is the only entry in our dictionary. So imagine Webster's dictionary only having one word and one definition. And so you might wonder to yourself, well, why did they go to all this trouble to create this observable dictionary class just to hold one item, this one collection of groups? Wouldn't it make sense if they had multiples? Well, again, I would remind you that this is a template. You could add more things to the dictionary if you're expanding this example for your own purposes. Then you can pull out what you need in the binding expression in XAML, like we'll look at in just a moment. But you can only set the data context for the page to one object. So you would use this dictionary as a container for all of the data that you need to load into the page itself. Okay, everything that you need to bind to from the XAML. So again, this case, maybe it doesn't fully flex the muscles of the observable dictionary, but still you're going to need a container, one object, and that will serve as the default view model, the default view model that we bind to for the rest of the XAML page. And so it might as well be something that's flexible enough for future use, because again, that's the intent of the template, to be used by you to flesh it out and use for your own content, not just this silly little example. Okay, so now let's go here to the hubpage.xaml file and take a look at the pages declaration. Specifically, take a look at the data context property of the page. It's set to binding default view model. Where does this get this default view model from? Well, you can see that the source, the relative source, is self. So basically, look in my own class definition to find an instance or a property called default view model and use that as the context of data, where the data comes from, the data context for everything you see on this entire page. All right. So again, that is where we call into this read-only property default view model, which will be loaded up with all the groups and all the associated items into this entry, this key called groups, right? So a data context is defined by a parent, like the page, which owns everything else inside of it, like the grid, the hub sections, and so on. So the data context is defined by a parent, and then it's utilized by its children. So in this example, the parent is the page class, and the children are the various controls that will take the data from the default view model and bind to it. So given that the data context for the page is set to the default view model property of the page, the observable dictionary that was already full of data, now we can revisit the XAML that we looked at a couple of lessons ago. So let's take a look at hub section number 2 here, and let's interpret that in light of the fact that we now understand what we're binding to, what the data source is, or the context for the entire page. All right, so we see here that we're binding to, in the hub section, we're binding to groups. So it's setting its own data context for all of its children to specifically a property of the default view model called groups. And not just any groups, but groups sub zero. And what this means is that we want to work with the groups key, but since sample data groups is bringing back a whole collection of groups as defined in our sample data source, through this whole process of loading multiple groups and then associated items, we want to grab the first element, or if we look at our sample data, this first group and its associated items, all right, as it comes out of the file. So that's what we're binding to with this expression. We're binding essentially to this first group and all of its associated items. All right, so that's the use of this sub-zero, okay? Now that we're binding to that group, that single group, it has an items property, right? So since the data context for all of the hub section's children, including the grid view, is that one group, we would expect them to be able to bind to a specific property of that group being items, all right? And then for all the individual item or sample data item objects, we're going to look inside of the item template for the remainder of the binding syntax. So we're setting the context for this item template to the items property of a single group. So back up here to page.resources. And so a single item in the items collection will have, let's take a look at our sample data source one more time and look at all the properties that are defined. Unique ID, title, subtitle, description, image path, and content. All right. So here we're going to bind to the image path as the source of the image. That makes sense. And we'll bind to the title as the text property for the text block. And that, my friends, is what gives us the data to select one of the images from our assets folder. And then the text that we see here. So for example, item one will have a title of item title colon one, and its image path will be set to assets slash light gray. Obviously there's some other properties here we're not utilizing, but that's essentially how we're getting from the very top where we're binding to the context default view model all the way down, and the context flows down from the top of the page to each individual item in each individual item of type sample data item, then here in our image and our text block. So just in case you don't see the correlation, I illustrated this with a diagram. Hopefully this will help. On the left-hand column, you have data, and on the right hand column you have the XAML, and you can see how the data flows down from the default view model to the individual properties of the sample data item, and then how that corresponds with the XAML. At the top you have the page and its data context is set to the default view model, and then how it correlates all the way down to the individual image and text block controls with their given properties that are being bound to image path and title respectively. Okay, so just a couple of takeaways from this first example. First of all, keep in mind that the data context keeps flowing downward. In other words, the page's data context flows into the hub section, and the hub section's data context flows into the grid view, and so on until we get to the bottom, which is where we actually display the given properties of one item. So understanding the hierarchy in binding will allow you to keep things straight in your own mind. The second thing that I want to take away from this first example is that when you're first getting started, it's useful to stay close to the examples like the ones in this template. If you can merely modify the existing example until you're more comfortable with the hierarchy of controls and settings, you're going to be more productive right away. So you're going to see how I'm able to utilize this hub app project template, and especially this data structure. Like I said, we're going to create that entire cupcake app here in just a few lessons. So I'm going to make a few small changes to these templates, to the data structure, to the data, and then to the XAML that represents it. And I'm going to be able to create a whole new app using different data, but essentially the same kind of hierarchy, making tiny changes. All right, so let's take a look at a couple more examples. I want to back up now to hub section one, since I kind of glossed over that. So here's the, first of all, the XAML that binds to The groups. So again, at the very topmost level, let me bind all this up. We have the default view model, and the default view model has a key called groups. So our hub section one will bind to all of the groups, which makes sense because when we look at section one, it just has the group titles. So we're working with groups, not items at this level. Now, we said that the data context flows down. So here in the list view, we're going to list all the titles for the groups. Therefore, we're going to bind to the groups that are set as the data context for the hub section. So in this case, you can see that we're not binding to something else. The binding is going to flow directly from hub section groups down to the item source for the list view, which is also binding to groups. And then for a specific item in the group, so the item template, a specific group item or group object, we're going to bind to its title. And I think that's it. We're just binding to title there in a text block, which you can see here. Okay? So the big differences that we're going to see as we compare this hub section one versus hub section two is that in hub section one, you can see that we used a list view instead of a grid view like we used in hub section two. In hub section one, each individual item is styled in the body of the data template. So we didn't require, for example, to go up to page.resources and define a data template here. Why not? Well, because in our particular case, we didn't need to reuse, let's see, here we go. We didn't re need to reuse this data template for other hub sections. So we just went ahead and defined it right here in line. All right. And then the third thing that differentiates what we did in section one versus section two is that here we see in the item source, it's just using this binding to pull the entire flow. It doesn't refine the data context from the hub section. It says, hey, you're already binding to a list of groups. That's exactly what I need to bind to right here in order to display each title, the title of each group. Whereas in hub section two, we're refining the data context down to a specific group. Within a given specific group, we're refining it down to a specific property of that group. And then further, as we get into the item template, getting to the individual properties of an individual item. All right, so that's the fundamental difference. So the rest of the hub sections use similar techniques to the two that we've looked at, and I'll let you take a look at those on your own. Hopefully, you'll be able to decipher them based on this discussion. But there is one last thing, one last curiosity that I want to kind of look at here, and that is this data. As I move my mouse cursor from hub section to hub section, you can see that in the designer, I'm able to get real data. In fact, we compared this data to the data that we find in the sampledata.json file. It's identical. It's pulling that data. The question is, how is it pulling that data? And the way that it's doing that, let me move this back over and go up here to the top. There are actually several namespace declarations and then this D colon data context. Now, in the past, I've gone into long explanations about what all this means, but essentially, whenever you see this D colon in XAML or especially in phone apps, that prefix should spark in your mind the thought of design time only. So what we're doing here is creating a design time data context versus a runtime data context. The design time data context is ignorable at runtime. So that's the purpose of these two namespaces. They look up the rules for a design time experience, and that design time experience should be ignored at runtime. So this D colon data context is set to, now we're binding and we're setting a source attribute equal to Design data, and then where are we pulling the actual values from? Ah, yes, the data model slash sample data dot JSON, and so on. And so therefore, that's how we're able to get this data. It's utilized by Visual Studio and by Blend in order to give us this rich design time experience. Why do we need a design time experience that displays data visually at all? Do we need this? Well, we don't need it per se. If you're creating your own app, you could skip that step. However, it's convenient whenever you use the Visual Studio Designer to preview what the content will look like whenever it's properly styled. So just know this: if you change from the sampledata.json file and use some other technique or some other data source for your app, you might get weird results at design time. You just won't see any data, or you might get some error that's displayed on the designer that it can't bind to that data. And so at that point, you have a decision to make. Are you going to supply fake data and essentially re-implement this sample data.json file so that you get a rich design time experience? Or are you going to ignore that altogether and just keep running the app every time you want to see one small tweak or change that you've made to the layout of your data in your data templates? All right. So before we conclude our examination of binding, and data contexts and data sources and things like that, let's move on to the item page dot XAML. And let's take a look specifically at its code behind the item page dot XAML dot CS. And you'll see that it shares a lot of the same sorts of features as the hub page we just looked at. For example, here's a private field called default view model. It is of type observable dictionary as well. There is a public getter for this public property called default view model. If we take a look in the load state, here we are retrieving the navigation parameter that's sent to us by the navigation helper class as an argument into the load state method, and then we're calling that get item async from our sample data source to retrieve a single item, and then we're binding to that item with a single key called item, setting it equal to the actual object that we're pulling from get item async. All right, and then in the item page.xaml, let's move this over a little bit, we can see that we're setting our data context to the default view model dot item. So here we're saying go ahead right off the bat and just give us the dot item. In other words, give us the only item that we would expect to see inside of our dictionary called item. And where do we find that? Well, we find it in the same class where we're working in right now. In other words, item page, because it's defined in the class item page here. These are two parts of a whole of they're partial implementations of this single class item page, right? Moving on, if we scroll down then to our stack panel, which is this little title panel here at the very top, the only thing we're really binding to right now is the title. The title property of the single item that we pulled back into our default view model with the key item that we pulled from get item async. All right. Hopefully, by moving and traversing that back and forth, you can see the relationship and how that works. All right. Obviously, taking a look at this, and you can even see there's a little to-do item. Content should be placed within the following grid to show details for the current item. They just didn't bother to do that. We could take the time and flesh that out if we really wanted to, and we will whenever we build a full app. But the intent here is to merely provide the framework that you would use to add more detail to this page. So the most important aspect of this is the binding syntax. In this case, we were able to navigate at the page level to the single key called item, set to a sample data item, and then bind to the individual properties of that sample data item. All right, so let me take a moment and talk about a few of the popular binding expressions that you'll probably see in XAML. We've looked at quite a few, but I want to clarify this just to make sure that you understand how this works. There's so many permutations that I couldn't possibly talk about them all. You need to be able to read and interpret this and understand how data context flows down into the control. So, first of all, you might see just a binding expression with open and closing curly braces with just the word binding. And so it's basically saying bind to the current data context. So whatever my parent bound to, I want to bind to that as well. And we already saw that just a moment ago when we were looking at, I think, yeah, that was on the hubpage.xaml subsection 1. And since my parent binds to groups and I want to display group titles, I'm going to bind to groups as well. So I'm just going to use the binding word by itself. It says bind to whatever my parent bound to, in this case, groups. Okay? The next binding syntax you might see is something like binding my property. And we can see that here in any of these item templates that are defined up here in the page.resources. So for example, this text block is binding to the title property. Well, we would assume that its parent is a sample data item, right? So we're binding to as the data context flows down from the grid view, it's set to items and it flows down to the item template, the standard 200 by 180 tile item template, then we would expect each individual item in the items collection to have a title property in an image path. So that is basically we're saying bind to the my property of the current data context. All right. We might see binding my object dot my property. And we saw that here in the item page.xaml when we were defining the data context for the entire page. Give me the default view model, but specifically give me one property, or in this case, one key called item. Okay? So bind to the my property or key property of my object. My object should be a property of the current data context, which it is. Okay? And then binding, and then element name equals my text box, path equals text. So if you see this, it basically is saying bind the data context is another control with the ID or the name my text box. And I want you to bind to the text property of my text box. All right. And then finally, the one last one we'll look at, although there are plenty more, is binding my object relative source equals relative source self. So bind to, and we've seen this, anytime we've defined a data context here or here for the page, right? Basically this. So we're going to bind to my object, which should be a member of the current class. So I would expect in this particular example on screen that my object would be an object or an object graph defined as a partial class for this page, which as we know is indeed the case. Okay. All right. So in addition to these, there are many more advanced scenarios, many more. If you want to see some more examples and you want to see them in context, then check out this example, the XAML data binding sample. Now, admittedly, this is a Windows Store app project. However, most of the ideas will transfer over to binding with the phone's API as well. I'd also recommend that you take a look at this data binding article. Admittedly, this one was for Windows Presentation Foundation. However, many of the ideas in this article, as you read through the various sections here, transfer over to binding with the phone as well, because they're all based on XAML, the same core fundamental technology that's allowing you to do the binding. All right, so my final word on binding is this. In our example so far, we've only seen one side of data binding from a data source to the XAML. However, you can also bind in a two-way fashion, allowing changes via changes to the data via the input controls, like a text box, a combo box, check box, a radio button, and so on. So any changes made to those controls will affect the underlying data source, and any changes to the data source will affect the control. So there's that two-way relationship. In fact, this two-way binding is a basic tenet of a pattern that's known as MVVM, or rather model view, view model, which we'll examine in the next lesson. So just to recap before we conclude, we've covered a lot of ground in this lesson, admittedly. Binding, and specifically data binding, is a key concept in building data-driven applications based on a data model. It's how you marry the data that's stored in a data file, like our sample data.json file, to the user interface, and so that they can be displayed, that data can be displayed on screen in a declarative fashion using XAML. So my recommendation is that you keep your structure as flat as possible as you're getting started to ensure that you don't confuse yourself as you set the data context for your app's object graph. So again, the more layers you have and the more the data flows from the page level all the way down to the control, the item template, and so on, the more room there is for mistakes and confusion. I'll have to admit, when I was getting started, was confused a lot. So, it can happen to any of us, right? All right, so we're going to pick this back up and talk more about the philosophy behind all this binding stuff, which is MVVM. We'll see you in the next lesson. Thank you.